CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome my colleague Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes a column for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. And we turn to the tragedy in India. The numbers are numbing. So, how did this happen? And Sadanand asked that question in its most recent column because Narendra Modi, the very popular Prime Minister of India, had celebrated India being passed over like the angel of death had passed over in the first iteration of the virus throughout Eurasia. And now, Sadanand, a very good evening to you. There's not one answer, but there is the question of did India lower its guard or was everybody caught unaware by the second wave and what is to be done? First, what is the explanation from the Prime Minister's office about how this happened? Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Well, you know, the short answer is it's both. It's certainly true that the emergence of this variant, B1617, which in shorthand is known as the Indian variant or the double mutant, that certainly played a very large role because this particular variant is much more transmissible. It may also be more deadly, but we're not certain, but we do know that it's a much more transmissible variant. And so what happened was that the number of cases multiplied suddenly and very rapidly, and that caught the government by surprise. But as I point out in my column, it was also the government's fault to the extent that they dropped the ball. They declared victory prematurely. They displayed hubris. They basically thought by February that India would not have a second wave, even though we already knew that many other countries had suffered second waves.
Because we're right now in the middle of it, there's no statistic that's reliable. We're looking at a great number of deaths, and people threatened everywhere. In Delhi is the city that I have information on. People leaving Delhi. The concern was, as the city's empty, does that take the virus into the countryside? That's the logic of this. Do we have any anecdotes that support the presumption is that we can't see what it's doing in the larger part of the country?
John, unfortunately, that's already happening. Now, the official the recorded deaths per day is roughly 4,000. The experts I've spoken with say that the true number, conservatively speaking, is between 6 and 8 times that. So, in fact, we've got between 24,000 and 32,000 people dying every day. And the disease has already spread to the rural hinterland, which has very little testing, virtually no or very little hospital infrastructure. And we are seeing stories of people who basically think they have some kind of a fever. They try to treat it with a paracetamol or some kind of, basic drug like that, continue working, and essentially, sadly, drop dead a few days later. And a lot of these deaths are, a lot of these cases are not being counted, and a lot of these deaths are not being counted. So we don't have the true figure, but what we do know is that it is right now ripping through the countryside, particularly in the populous Indo-Gangetic plains.
The anecdotes from Britain are that it spread there, yes, but at the same time that AstraZeneca is effective in stopping the virus. We can presume that it also extends to the other drugs, Moderna, Pfizer, etc. Is there AstraZeneca in India? Is there access to that? And why don't they have enough if that's where they are now?
So they are, in fact, one of the world's largest manufacturers of the AstraZeneca vaccine. The world's largest vaccine manufacturer, the Serum Institute of India, tied up very early when it was still speculative whether the AstraZeneca vaccine would work or not. Unfortunately, they have not, the Indian government has not ordered sufficient doses quickly enough. And again, you know, look at the scale of the population. If you look at it in absolute terms, India has administered more than 150 million doses, and that seems like a pretty big number. But if you look at it compared to India's population, only around 3% of the country's population is fully vaccinated. So the problem really is how do they get the, we know that the vaccine works. But the problem is, how do you get the vaccine into arms really fast? And at this point, unfortunately, it looks like the second wave, the government has already been way behind, and the second wave is just going to rip through the population in much of the country. There's not much that can be done. The hope is that they will ramp up the vaccination in time to prevent a third wave, and that, of course, matters to people in the United States and elsewhere, too, because what we need is for the coronavirus to be brought under control in places like India, because we don't want new mutants developing in large populations and some of those mutants breaking out and becoming impervious to the vaccines we now have. So that's the kind of larger importance of this.
Some countries have blocked flights from India, Australia, I can name, Britain, and the United States. Is that a problem for India, and how long can it survive being cut off like that from major routes before its economy suffers? You can believe that that would exacerbate the situation.
It's certainly a problem. The economy is already suffering. The economy shrank. Yeah, last year, it was one of the worst hit of the G20 economies. The economy shrank by 8.5%. And this year was supposed to be a big rebound. And now, of course, the rebound is in question. In terms of the effect, you know, John, it just depends on how long this goes on. Now, should India manage to get a handle on this problem, let's say, over the next 3 or 4 months, and things look to be in control and flights start opening up again, I think it'll weather the storm. But if it's not able to get a handle on this heading into the winter and it remains cut off, then, of course, the implications for the Indian economy and for large sections of the global economy, outsourcing industry, tech industry, to a certain extent, supply chains, all of that gets affected.
Narendra Modi, he is in charge of his party and of his state, but is he vulnerable now? Does this translate into political terms in the near term or the far term, or is this just what you'd have to put down, a tragedy from above and everybody will adjust?
Short answer, he is more vulnerable than he has ever been, but he remains an extremely powerful political figure with a large base and a charismatic style that appeals to many Indians. And he heads the most powerful and wealthy party by a large measure. So I would not rule him out, but at the same time, I think it's fair to say that we have not seen him tested and challenged the way we're seeing him tested and challenged right now.
The subcontinent is more than India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. I've not seen anything about the virus there, this variant, the India variant. But we can presume, I mean, the borders are porous. We know this. We can presume that it will be spreading in all directions, and we can presume that this is the beginning of a rolling tragedy in South Asia.
You know, John, that's a mystery to me, because the India has been in the grip of the second wave for more than a month now. And it's true that the level of testing in both Pakistan and Bangladesh is quite low. But if you look at it in terms of their preparation for a second wave, whether it's vaccinations or whether it's hospital infrastructure, their situation, in fact, would be much more dire than India's. We have not yet seen credible reports of a huge second wave breaking there. The country in South Asia that has been hit very hard is the tiny Himalayan country of Nepal. And the health infrastructure is essentially very sadly collapsing. But if this hits Pakistan and Bangladesh, you're absolutely right, because they're densely populated and have many of the same characteristics, but it does not seem to have happened yet.
Yes, what we have here is a guessing game, Sadanan, and it's especially difficult because of, you know, the diaspora from the subcontinent are spread around the world, but are particularly in Europe and in America. And the diaspora can only call home and ask how it is. It must be a torment not to be able to go home and help. But what they need is oxygen. That's what I'm told again and again, oxygen. And some of that oxygen is flowing. People are suffocating, not dying directly from the virus, but they need to get their breaths. Sadanan Dumet.
Oh, absolutely.
No, please go ahead.
Well, Well, that's a very important point. Like, a lot of the people who are dying in India would not be dying if they had oxygen. So these are avoidable deaths, which I think really makes the tragedy even more tragic.
Sadanand Dubey of the American Enterprise Institute and the Wall Street Journal editorial page. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.